Paper 10, section 7, which is old single column, page 115. All right, well, we're going to wrap up the second of the Pentateuchs here tonight. existential deity here. You know, so that we can get into cosmology next week. But first of all, the universal censor has a few more little things to talk about here about the Paradise Trinity. He's kind of showing his hand in the title of the section, over control. You know the mother's in there somewhere. Let's just see what he spins here this time.
7, the overcontrol of supremacy. The first, second, and third persons of deity are equal to each other, and they are one. The Lord our God is one God. There is perfection of purpose and oneness of execution in the divine trinity of eternal deities. The Father, the Son, and the conjoined actor are truly and divinely one. Of a truth it is written, I am the first, and I am the last, and beside me there is no God.
All right. Let's just notice how he starts out. It's always interesting how he starts these out. Sandwiched between the Bible quotes, did you notice oneness of execution, divinely one. We know we're with the Paradise Trinity, we're tied to the universal one of infinity. Right? so just immediately in the first paragraph, He's alluding to, again, his point of view, top down point of view, unity point of view. Now, what's he doing though with that? I mean, besides that, that allusion, that double allusion to the universal one of infinity. He's got these two, if you're familiar with the Bible, two classic. Quote passages from the Bible. So, we've been pointing out all the way along. He's been doing his best to encourage the person who's coming out of a Christian context to think about what they know about God and what you can. Certainly begin to see about the Paradise Trinity tied to there being three persons of the Paradise Trinity, and what does he do? He picks out a couple of passages, and he's basically saying that first one. The subtext of that is he's saying. All the way from the times of Moses, because that's from particular one is from Deuteronomy, right after the Ten Commandments, how they're restated in Deuteronomy. From the times of Moses, all the way to the times in that second one, that's Second Isaiah. Pretty much the whole span, from the times of Moses to the times of 2 Isaiah to the times of the exile. You've said things about the oneness of God. And notice how he phrases the preface to that second one. He doesn't say, of a fact it is written. He says, of a truth it is written. Now, it's not a fact that you have a simplistic, monotheistic reality. That you might think these sorts of passages, you know, are pointing to. You know, but he's saying, okay, there, where's, you know, where's the truth of that? The unity viewpoint is true. From the unity viewpoint, there is one God. Many facets, but one God. And certainly, talking about the Paradise Trinity offers an inroad to taking that top-down point of view. I mean, the Paradise Trinity, you know, itself is not God, but it certainly is a lot more understandable from a top-down point of view, like we've been pointing out. So he's just using the opportunity again to say, you know, you've said things like this. You know, the Lord our God is one God. Beside me, there is no God, etc. So, you know, just he's saying, take that as an on-ramp, and just put it in a less primitive, less simplistic context, and take the top-down point of view. Okay, so you know that he's done now with you know, finding little things in the Bible to draw on, and he's going to take us the rest of the way home. And you'll see he actually is alluding to a lot of the big picture issues here as he wraps this up.
As things appear to the mortal on the finite level, the Paradise Trinity, like the Supreme Being, is concerned only with the total. Total planet, total universe, total super universe, total grand universe. This totality attitude exists because the Trinity is the total of deity, and for many other reasons.
Just one little minor thing right at the end there, to note first. See, again, he's trying to leverage off of the Paradise Trinity to bigger things. He's not just talking about the Trinity here. You know, he says, well, that totality attitude exists because the Trinity is a total deity and for, yeah, many other reasons. Let's bring in one little thing, because we've talked about this a little bit. So we had, remember how just a few sections back, we had that famous triple of aspects of functioning of the Paradise Trinity. Totality attitudes. And remember the other two?
Coordinate action.
And?
Cosmic over control.
Yep. Cosmic over control. All right. Those three that are tied to the three aspects of the mother. Okay. So he's bringing up that, you know, so when you talk about those are aspects of functioning, you know, if you actually think about those three, correlated with the three aspects of the mother, you can say that God the Mother has totality attitude, is a coordinate actor, and a cosmic over-controller. You know, you actually bring it into a person acting. And so the totality attitude part, that's you know, coming from, you have the three facets of deity that are being downstepped. You have the infinite capacity, the infinite potential, and the infinite upholder. You downstep the infinite capacity, a capacity, and you've got some expression of a totality attitude. Now, there is a whole, you know, W-H-O-L-E, at some level of the hierarchical expression of the mother. So, there's one of the, you know, another, you know, the other reasons he's pointing to, you know, fundamentally the Paradise Trinity, you can appreciate an awful lot of the importance of that fact as a source for the mother, you know, and as the mother, you have hierarchies of universes, like total grand universe, total super universe, total local universe, various domains of the mother, various wombs of the mother. Okay, and that's, you know, that's because there's a measure of capacity that's been downstepped. Okay, as things appear to the mortal on the finite level. So he that's where he starts out. So we just said he immediately was alluding to the top-down viewpoint in the first paragraph. So the first thing he does in the second paragraph is say, okay, well, you know, but you're not up there. You're down as about low a viewpoint as you can get, and you're looking up. But you can immediately recognize what we were just talking about, the domains of God the Mother. And saying the Paradise Trinity, like the Supreme Being, is concerned only with the total. Now, in the case of the Supreme Being, that little aside that he puts in there, the Supreme Being, as a transcendent being, engages the total finite. Yeah, so the total of the Supreme Being, he's alluding to there, is the total finite. And in terms of actually down in the finite, there is an immediate expression as the he, that is transcendent and engaging the total finite, is downstepped into the finite as a ubiquitous she of the total grand universe. What's the name of the mother that spans the total grand universe? The Universal Mother. The Universal Mother. Okay. So that's what's between the lines of that one, the Universal Mother. Total Super Universe, that's the reflective Mother Spirit. Total Local Universe, a creative Mother Spirit. Total Planet, now that's an interesting one to throw in. What's he pointing to there? I mean, it's not like, every planet is a little mother womb, that there's a separate, God the Mother, as it were, for each planet. In what way do you have a mother-like engagement of a total planet? No.
Life carriers?
Yeah. The adjutants. Right, the seven adjutants. You have this, the Holy Spirit, it covers the whole local universe. That hovers over all the planets. And so that's a local universe presence. But the adjutant mind ministry, is tuned down to the life on each world as a little downstepped projection of this mother presence, down to engage the total planet. And a few papers up as we get farther along here in part one, you have the seven Supreme Spirit Groups paper. And you have Creative Mother Spirits in there, and you have the adjutant, mind spirits in there. So a little reminder that, there's, they're her mind, it's her mind ministry, they're not even entities, they're circuits of her mind. But because you have, for each planet, a precise tuning to that planet, there's a quasi-separate domain, of the total planet. Okay? All right. Okay, so that's what that's alluding to there. All right, a little bit more.
The Supreme Being is something less and something other than the Trinity functioning in the finite universes. But within certain limits and during the present era of incomplete power personalization, this evolutionary deity does appear to reflect the attitude of the Trinity of Supremacy. The Father, Son, and Spirit do not personally function with the Supreme Being. But during the present universe age, they collaborate with him as the Trinity. We understand that they sustain a similar relationship to the ultimate. We often conjecture as to what will be the personal relationship between the paradise deities and God the Supreme when he is finally evolved, but we do not really know.
Okay, whole bunch of things there. Let's just slowly step through that. Okay, so just notice how he said, okay, so he's bringing the Supreme Being back into the picture here. Started with a little aside, now he's actually making it to bringing the fact up front. He's saying, okay, the Supreme Being is something less and something other than the Trinity functioning in the finite universes. Okay, so back when we were going through the Supreme Papers, we spent a lot of time trying to better understand the nature of God the Supreme. And, when we're using this individuality name, the Supreme Being, so let's just stick with that for the moment. So when we think about, like I said, that the Supreme Being is a transcendent fact, you know, basically a part of the absentite, you know, domain. Down in the finite, you don't just have a single fact, and it's not a he-like fact. There's a she and an it. You downstep the Supreme Being into the finite, and you have the Universal Mother, like we were just pointing out, and the Almighty Supreme. Okay? Now, something other than, okay, very immediately, the Almighty Supreme is not immediately tied to the Trinity. Set the Almighty Supreme aside. But the Universal Mother is definitely tied to the Trinity. We're just, you know, talking about. And, so think about that a little bit. Because something less than the Trinity functioning in the finite universes. Okay, so first of all, we've talked about here, what was that, just back in section 5. And we have this hierarchy of the functioning of the Trinity. Trinity of absoluteness, Trinity of ultimacy, Trinity of supremacy. When you're talking about the finite, it's not like the Paradise Trinity directly as one of the faces of the universal one of infinity is just directly there in the finite. Okay, there's a definite downstepping, you know, hence the something less. Okay, there's a downstepping into the finite from that source point of the Paradise Trinity down to the Universal Mother. Okay, so that's the basics of what's being referred to there. But within certain limits and during the present era of incomplete power personalization, you know, the power personalization, that the Supreme Being, you know, that when you know is a power personality synthesis. So when we're not going all the way to the point where we have that power personality synthesis of the Supreme Being, they're saying, this evolutionary deity does appear to reflect the attitude of the Trinity of supremacy. Very much so, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in the next paragraph. The Universal Mother phenomenon is tied to the Trinity of supremacy. Not the Trinity of ultimacy, or the Trinity of absoluteness, or just the raw fact of the Paradise Trinity, but the functioning of the Trinity relative to the finite. The Trinity of Supremacy. Okay, and then he says, the Father, Son, and Spirit do not personally function with the Supreme Being. Okay, so it's just, from our perspective now, you can't go anywhere and shake hands with the Supreme Being. The Supreme Being is not in the finite. Okay, and so from that perspective, you don't see, the Father, the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, or the Infinite Spirit engaging with something that's not there. Transcendently, yes, but not within the finite. So what do you see? But during the present universe age, they collaborate with him as the Trinity. Him as the Trinity, otherwise known as her. Right? Him as the Trinity is her, the Universal Mother. Okay. The personal purposive aspect of the Supreme Being now, before there is a Supreme Being, is the Universal Mother. And, you know, we understand that they sustain a similar relationship to the ultimate. You know, okay, all, you know, you just take this all up to the next notch, you've got the same thing going on there. Just as right now we have God the Supreme functioning as God the Mother, and that can be experienced. You know, at a higher level, you have God the Ultimate functioning in the Absonite as God the Mother. Okay? And see, and you notice how I flipped things. I went from talking about the individuality viewpoint of the Supreme Being to the unity viewpoint, God the Supreme. See, and he did the same thing. See, as he ends up the paragraph. So that you can, because that's the direct way to talk about what I just said about the finite and the absolute. God the Supreme functioning as God the Mother. Then there'll be God the Ultimate functioning as God the Mother. Or if you think about it in an eternity viewpoint, you have both of those right now. All right? And, you know, from that viewpoint, again, going back up to the something other than, you not only have God the Supreme functioning as God the Mother down in the finite, but you have God the Supreme functioning as God the... What's the other side of the power? God the Almighty, right? You know, you have God the Supreme functioning as God the Mother and God the Almighty. All right. A little bit more here.
We do not find the overcontrol of supremacy to be wholly predictable. Furthermore, this unpredictability appears to be characterized by a certain developmental incompleteness. Undoubtedly an earmark of the incompleteness of the Supreme and of the incompleteness of finite reaction to the Paradise Trinity.
Okay. Again, there's a whole bunch of... Let's unpack that. Okay, starts out with... Okay, we do not find the overcontrol of supremacy to be wholly predictable. Okay, so just without knowing really too much about the details of God the Supreme... You know, if you're thinking logically, clearly about, you know, just bringing in over control, you know, we must be talking about some sort of a super additive consequence, you know, phenomenon here. You know, whenever there's super additivity, you know, you won't find that to be wholly predictable. Okay, so, I mean, that first statement is just kind of just that basic thing of you're taking a bottom up. Point of view, and you have, you know, like the super additive consequence of the relationship between the Mother and the Almighty is the Supreme, for instance. Okay, he says, but furthermore, see, and so yeah, that's one thing. But furthermore, you have these other issues. Okay, furthermore, this unpredictability appears to be characterized by a certain developmental incompleteness. Undoubtedly an earmark of the incompleteness of the Supreme. So let's start with that. Okay. Now let's, what exactly is he referring to here? So if you think about the functional levels, you could look at the levels up at the beginning of the foreword too, because that's all you don't need this whole chart for it, but this is convenient for me to just bring this out. If you remember on the Supreme level, the functioning of total deity, which, notice what he says, the overcontrol of capital S supremacy. What's the definition of capital S supremacy? The functioning of deity on the supreme level. Okay? Sixth functional level, the supreme level. Okay? The facets of deity that are there, if you look at, you know, up in the forward, are the supreme and the infinite upholder. Okay. So, see, undoubtedly an earmark of the incompleteness of the Supreme. So, on the, you know, when you talk about the about supremacy, capital S, the function of deity on the Supreme level, obviously, from this time viewpoint, the Supreme is incomplete. So, you know, there's not going to be the full functioning on that Supreme level from that facet. Well, now, what about the other facet? Well, just... purely on the infinite level is the infinite upholder, okay. But what about What about how the infinite upholder relates directly down here to the finite? Okay. Remember, we have the Paradise Trinity functions on all levels. For instance, on this level, functions at as the Trinity of Supremacy, like we were just talking about. The relationship, the superadditive consequence of the relationship between the Trinity of Supremacy and the infinite upholder is the finite upholder. And there it is right there, the finite upholder. Okay? So that the rest of it, and of the incompleteness of the finite reaction to the Paradise Trinity. You have the finite upholder. You have that cosmic over-control, like we were just talking, over-control of supremacy. You have that cosmic over-control. It's all there, engaging. But has the finite totally gotten up to speed with that influence? No. You have this slow process of the over-control actually gaining a foothold, you know, and beginning to get things under control. And that hasn't come to a completion yet because the finite is not complete yet. So those are the two incompletenesses that he's pointing to there. It's just one tied to each of the facets there on that sixth functional level, the supreme, and then, you know, essentially, you know, directly the finite upholder. Okay. Finite upholder is not done as a cosmic over-controlling influence yet. Okay, so see, now that, you know, you can't even begin to really appreciate what he's alluding to there until you've put all this stuff together. And that's the power of what we've managed to do here now, is we can really appreciate directly what he's what a particular relator is referring to when they go off on these curious little, you know, statements like this. It's like, what on earth are they talking about?
they're bringing things back to the root, mm-hmm. which is the oneness of deity.
Yeah, and so again, now just, you know, remind yourself of what they did up there at the beginning of the foreword. Is the first section about God? No. First section is about deity. Second section is about God. Why? Another reason why. They know that what they're about to do as they go forward here is to get us beyond some simplistic monotheistic viewpoint, some exalted volcano god viewpoint. You're going to have God this and God that and God the other thing, and it's going to, you know, and there's a great potential when you start to reveal all of the expressions of personalized deity that you can recognize, or even as you go forward in your universe career, directly engage as a being. I can walk up and shake hands with the Creator Son. I can walk up and shake hands with an Ancient of Days, etc. You know, these literal individuals that are God, personalized deity. You know, and that's the numbers of those start to proliferate. You can start to get this very fractured, fragmented relationship to reality. That's why it's so important, before you do that, before you lead people beyond some simple monotheism that they're pointing to here, that has held mankind's relationship to God reasonably close for millennia, by reminding them, the Lord our God is one God, and things like that, so they don't get all fuzzed out and fractured. You really need something to hold that unity. And that fact is deity. It's very important. If you're going to become a follower of the truths of the fifth epical revelation instead of someone that's just putting new wine in old wineskins, you need to put deity first. You need deity before you start to contemplate the now vast diversity that is God from an individuality viewpoint. So consecrate yourself. That's, you know, again, that's why we're spending so much time on, there's not just the individuality viewpoint. The unity viewpoint is of a truth, as he said. It's not just, well, you can kind of pretend, you know, if you look at, you know, that you can look at it like this, but it really is just nothing but the individuality viewpoint. No, you know, or the other way around, you know, I mean, they're both true. And, you know, the truth of the unity viewpoint is very important to hold the unity in the midst of this incredible diversity. You know, we had, you know, if you're a new reader and you've only gotten to paper 10, you haven't even begun to crack, you know, the diversity. We all know where it starts to go once you get past the cosmology papers. You know, you can't, you know, you quickly just get lost in a fog of beings, high and low, and it's just, you know, you're just totally lost. But you have to remember, despite all of that near infinite complexity, there's oneness. It's all one. It all works seamlessly together because there is unity. Yeah, good point. All right. Now, this is a very curious thing. The supremacy of events. Considering what all of you, I am sure, are aware of in the news. Note the next paragraph.
The mortal mind can immediately think of 1,001 things: catastrophic physical events, appalling accidents, horrific disasters, painful illnesses, and worldwide scourges, and ask whether such visitations are correlated in the unknown maneuvering of this probable functioning of the Supreme Being. Frankly, we do not know, but we are not really sure. But we do observe that, as time passes, all these difficult and more or less mysterious situations always work out to the welfare and progress of the universes. It may be that the circumstances of existence and the inexplicable vicissitudes of living are all interwoven into a meaningful pattern of high value by the function of the Supreme and the over-control of the Trinity.
Okay. Yeah. Why do bad things happen to good people? We talked about God the Supreme functioning in the finite as God the Mother on the one hand, God the Almighty on the other hand. There's also God the Supreme functioning more directly as God the Supreme, which from the individuality viewpoint, you know, we talk about the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme, and there is a way that the Supreme Being has a more direct engagement as the Supreme Mind. The supreme adaptability that engages the finite. Notice the word that they italicized. But we do observe that as time passes, all these difficult and more or less mysterious situations always work out for the welfare and progress of the universes. Why? Because this is all encompassed by the Supreme Mind. It's the Supreme Mind. It has supreme adaptability. You can give it any, absolute, if I can stretch the use of that word, you know, literally any set of finite facts, anything, and it can adapt to them and move them towards good. That's what Supreme Mind is. You know, God doesn't have to, predetermine these calamities in order so that good things will, you know, come out. Because, you know, that's one of the oldest rationalization schemes in the book. And it's like, well, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Because, you know, we notice that, you know, you give it enough time and good seems to come out of even the most horrific of calamities. And it's like, well, it must all just be predestined, you know, and it's the mysterious hand that, no. It can just be a burp of incompleteness, you know? Okay? It doesn't have any sort of transcendent, mysterious causality, you know, or blah, blah, blah. Okay? Just, you know, and they say, you know, when all is said, that doesn't matter if it has some mysterious thing to do or not. Whatever. The facts are the facts, and the Supreme Mind can take those facts towards the completeness that is the power personality synthesis of the finite. Doesn't matter what the facts are. Anyone can choose iniquity. Any volcano can erupt. Any earthquake can tear. You know, any tsunami can overwhelm, etc. And it doesn't matter. All you have to notice, there's one little if that you've got to bring in. You've got to go beyond just some simplistic, existential-like God notion. You need, as they set up here, you know, a little bit, you need experiential deity. You need deity that plays out over time. As time passes, notice the parenthetical. Okay? Not in the moment. You won't see it. But as time passes, the word is always. Okay? So, there's always going to be inexplicable vicissitudes, even for a being as high as this one. You know, think about who's saying this. You know, this isn't some seraphim or something. Okay, this is Mr. Super Top Down All-Seeing Eye Guy. Okay, the universal, a universal sensor, you know, and there's still many things that are inscrutable, even from that high a vantage point. Does he, you know, does he not know the truth of what Jesus admonished us to do? Fear not. He knows that. But he didn't. I mean, no, you know, he's speaking from a person. He's noticed it over time. Okay, there's experiential wisdom here. He's not that high. Okay, he's not God. All the beings in the super universes have come to recognize this. And over time, this all works. It's like, even though I can't see the Supreme Being, and people I trust do tell me there is such a fact, experientially, I think I know that to be true. Because how else would this be? That over time, always, there's this encompassing adaptability that comes into play. So, never let the high level of the authorship of a passage like this take it out of the personal relevancy for you. He knows this. You can know this too. Cultivate the clarity of understanding and recognition to just know that. I mean, Jesus challenged us to do it. You know. He said, I've gotten myself to the point where I know, I don't believe, I know that no harm can befall me, no real harm. You know, he wasn't some, mystic with his eyes closed, imagining that there weren't catastrophic physical events, appalling accidents, horrific disasters, painful illnesses, and worldwide scourges. He wasn't just closing his eyes and humming and believing that, you know, nothing's going to happen to him, like some people do, whistling past the graveyard sort of stuff, right? Okay? No real harm can befall you. It's not a belief, it's a knowing, an absolute certitude.
Some pain can befall you, but not real harm.
Death can befall you, but not real harm. Yeah. Actual harm, not real harm. And of course, the most problematic thing is not actual or real harm. The thing that haunts most people's lives is potential harm. They just live in endless fear of potential harm. Okay? And it just freezes them. You know, they're not living. Because their fear is, you know, lock them. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free from, for instance, that fear that doesn't allow you to live. You got to live and allow actual harm to befall you. You can't try to somehow, you know, manipulate the situation and live in this little bubble domain of your own making. No, you got to put yourself out there. If you want to really do great things, you got to really put yourself out there. Most likely, you're going to die. I mean, Jesus did great things. Where did that go? Led to death. Okay?
Right. Well, the arranged book confirmed my feelings. We were way out there on the periphery. Mm-hmm. And in the Jesus papers, it says there's one sentence in there where Jesus said he didn't want the world to feel orphaned.
Yeah.
So
he did what? After he left, he sent the Spirit of Truth so that you wouldn't feel a sense of orphanhood. Yeah.
But since I've been reading the Urantia book, I feel like I'm almost in the center of the universe.
Yeah. And for, you know, and what's the core of that feeling? It is true. I mean, you aren't factually at the center of the universe, but it's true. God loves you with an absolute love. He loves you as if you are the only being in the entire universe. That's what absolute love feels like. The more you know that absolute love, the more it will feel like you're at the center of the universe. Now you just need to challenge to not start believing that. Right. I mean, I know it feels like I'm at the center of the universe, and I also know absolutely that I'm not. Both are true. Okay, so that whole bit about you have this meaningful pattern of high value by the function of the Supreme and the overcontrol of the Trinity. You not only have that encompassing supreme mind, but you also do have what, you know, often gets recognized as providence, recognized and called providence, down within the finite, which stems from the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme, you know, that connectedness within the whole. So not only do things seem to happen coincidentally, you know, in the moment. But if that doesn't manifest over time, you'll see the Supreme Mind engage it and wholeness will come out of it still. So one way or another, there's wholeness, either in the moment because of the Mother and the Almighty, or over time because of the Supreme Mind. All right.
As a son of God, you can discern the personal attitude of love in all the acts of God the Father. But you will not always be able to understand how many of the universe acts of the Paradise Trinity redound to the good of the individual mortal on the evolutionary worlds of space. In the progress of eternity, the acts of the Trinity will be revealed as altogether meaningful and considerate, but they do not always so appear to the creatures of time.
So let's just reflect on that. Put it into the full context. You know, you notice he mentions God the Father. Okay, what's the other side? God the Mother. Just think about it. So this whole issue of your, as you attempt to grow in recognition of the fact of God the Mother, what are you up against? This is what he's pointing out here. There's a reason why historically mankind just really hasn't gotten there. You know, any any notion that you might call God the Mother was just some crude anthropomorphism, didn't really have anything, you know, much of all to do with the actual God the Mother. But if you actually try to take this step forward and recognize both the personal fact of God the Father and the personal fact of God the Mother, it's not the same level of difficulty. So like we've said so much, like he's saying right here, as a son of God, you can discern the personal attitude of love in all the acts of God the Father. So, you know, when you experience that direct laser beam into your inner life by God the Father, you know, when that love, you can tell, has reached in and engaged you, you feel it directly, and it doesn't take a heck of a lot of consecration of mind to have that experience, just a faint little flicker of faith in a primitive human can get you that experience, and a little bit of reflection, you know, will lead you to say, you know, I think I was just contacted by a fact that I think I've got to call God the Father. Okay. So that's not that complex a thing to get. And so, not surprisingly, you can say God the Father, and a lot of people will go, oh, yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. But if you say God the Mother, you're going to be confronted with lots of, you know, heads cocking like a dog and you know, or even rejection of the notion. It's like, no, there is no such experience. That's not true. You know, because if I haven't experienced it, it doesn't exist. You know, the mind projection fallacy, you know, subjective viewpoint. So that's, you know, and then just to complicate that, you know, not only is God the Mother as a personal purpose of fact much subtler, because like he said up front, in order to really begin to recognize that, you have to have some recognition of some level of the whole. I mean, at the very least, you've got to have begun to have a wholeness of your, just the mind, you know, where you have the seven, all seven adjutants having some sort of experiential recognition and an encompassing of the Holy Spirit of that, you know, so that it feels whole. You at least have to have that, pointing to the individuality of the whole, to sense that there's God the Mother. But, you know, even more beyond that, if you can begin to have some sense of a wholeness that's big enough, that's the size of Nebadon, the size of Orvintot, the size of the grand universe. But notice he's bringing in, you know, spinning off the last paragraph. It's even more complicated than that, because the mother acts just as perfectly as the father, but the mother acts over time. Father acts in a moment as an injection into space. You know, the mother acts over time. So if you haven't taken delight in cultivating a more eternalized viewpoint, if you still are very animal-like in your consciousness and just sort of recognize things from moment to moment, you know, and you can occasionally have God the Father poking his finger into a moment and recognize his existence, but if that's, you know, the extent of your consciousness, you know, you're not going to pick up on the mother. You got to have it. It's like, wait a minute, there's something more than just something that intervenes in the moment here. There's an expression of God that is spread out over the whole of the expanses of space and time here. It's different, similar but different. Okay, if you don't have that more eternalized viewpoint, when you bring time, you know, into your consciousness, all you see is the vicissitudes of time. You know, and there can't be anything outside of the occasional laser beam that I experience in my inner life. This outside here is not God. It's ugliness and death and disease and on your list goes. If there was a God without, bad things wouldn't happen to good people. So there can't be something that we would call God the Mother, some sort of a totality attitude God. That's what he's getting. Can you see beyond that? Have you taken delight in cultivating something that goes beyond just seeing the black dots of life? You know, do you spend all your days, ruminating on the latest black dot that's appeared on the news? Or do you see something beyond the occasional black dot? Because they actually are just occasional, even though they may seem like they're everything, and that's all you do is fixate on the black dot of the day. Do you see the white background? Do you see God the Mother? Yeah. Or are you still in that very rudimentary, childish starting stages, in initial stages of your spiritual consciousness, where you just use your spiritual consciousness as an error and evil detector, with an endless yearning that God the Father will poke his finger in somewhere? Okay? Does your life consist of pretty much of regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future? You really could benefit from a recognition of God the Mother in your life. Yeah. The God of the white background.
Yeah. Like Jesus said, resist not evil. I put good in the place of evil. Isn't that, we're under those same lines?
Right, that's along the same lines as I'm saying, yeah. I mean, you can choose to go about doing good. You don't have to just sit there and vainly hope for the future. It's like, well, boy, I sure hope one day God the Father intervenes. Boy, I'm going to be right there if he does. Man, I'm going to be sitting at his right hand. I'm going to be, Robin to his Batman. That's me, man. I'm going to be all over that. Well, you can only, say, I know that no real harm can befall me when you know that you're standing on a white foundation. The upholder has no gaps in it, no edge. Till you know the way of God, the God upon which you can stand, your life will feel like shaky ground. You can't have that certitude. You can't have that rock-solid assurance with just your faint flicker of faith trying to somehow grasp the Father, and try to remember. It's like, well, I remember one time I think he intervened, and I'm trying to hold on to that in the midst of my turmoil today, hoping that maybe that'll happen again. That is not the way to live your life. Okay, you need to set your life free, Only knowing that there is this immutable plane upon which you can stand can set your life free. You need the Mother. And you'll find that if you start to live, on that rock-solid plane, there will be more of an experience of intervention into your life. Because, the Father, it needs, He, where is he coming from? He's coming from the rock solid center of infinity. Okay. You can't be flopping about. You need to be holding yourself still for him to reach you. He can't somehow reach you in the choppy seas of your agitated mind. You need to have taken delight in cultivating and standing on the perfect peace that is, the creative Mother Spirit, the Holy Spirit within you, that domain of stillness. If you stand there, he can touch you there. If you're down here, like a cork in the ocean, you're not going to experience the Father's loving hand. A recognition of the Father initiates a certitude. It, for instance, initiates the thought of hope in your mind. You know, because the Father touched you, hope is a thought that you can have. But to get to that, like again, to take that to the next notch, to grow your faith into trust requires a relationship with God the Mother. To have living faith requires a relationship with God the Mother. That's what's missing, you know, in so many people's lives is that second step of the consecration. I consecrate my will to the perfect will of God the Father, and from this point forward, having been initiated by the Father, I consecrate my mind over time to grow in relationship to the harmony and stability that is the Mother's hand upon which I can stand. I will become more at peace with each passing day. I won't be grasping today like I was yesterday. I won't be grasping tomorrow like I am today. I'm going to have a progressing, perfecting nature. I'm going to have the Mother grow me. Yeah. That's the way I'm going to be a dynamic phenomenon. That. And when a few years of that experience have flown under the bridge, you'll look back and have a very different sense. You'll begin to be able to eternalize your consciousness because you'll see that it did all work out. No matter how problematic it seemed in the moment, things did work out. It's like I can trust. I don't just have to be a grasping faith. I can trust. I can begin to leave fear behind. Mere faith doesn't leave fear behind. Mere faith, you know, it's just spiritual faith. It's not soul trust. You know, it's just trying to somehow, from moment to moment, antidote fear. That's not the purpose. God didn't give you the ability to have faith so that you could be a moment-to-moment animal phenomenon, each moment antidoting the fear of the moment. That's not why he gave you faith. He gave you faith so you could grow it into trust and assurance. He gave it as an initiation of something. You know? And humans need to ask themselves, what did he initiate? What am I supposed to do next? You can supply favorable conditions to be grown. Man cannot cause growth, but he can supply favorable conditions.
So as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about someone who may be in jail for life, and this person would be around incredible dysfunction. So how would they ever find this peace and comfort and warmth with the Mother, with all these dysfunctional beings around them?
May not be possible in this life. That's why there's mansion worlds. Remember, there's nothing we can do about the two historical issues in play, the nurture and the nature issues in our past. Because of the rebellion, we don't have a civilization that's been uplifted. We don't have an environment that we function in that can help us as little children. We have, you know, a lot of the orgy of darkness and death, you know, swirling around us. And then it's like, well, okay, but if I'm strong, integrous within, I can still deal with that. Well, guess what? We didn't get that either, okay, because of the default. We all didn't get the internal biologic integrity we were supposed to have gotten, okay? So we got a nurture problem, and not just a nurture problem, we have a nature problem as well. So,
because we grew so incredibly fast,
right? Well, yeah, and there's that, and of course, yeah. Now we're outstripping,
and it's
our limited abilities.
It's like we can't keep up with ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why the revelation is here, because of that, you know, the next problem. Exactly. But, even setting that aside, it's still, I mean, many people are just not going to have what it takes internally in the face of all the difficulty without to transcend it, to not be overcome by it. But that's where grace comes in, and you have this literal fact of grace that's been revealed to us now, that we have these next worlds that are there purely because of the incompleteness of this life, the vicissitudes that can't be avoided, even on the best of worlds, let alone on a world like ours. We need a better opportunity many times. There's just, we're going to falter and fall, many of us, in this life. That's just the way it is. At least those people can be told the good news. Even if they can't find within them to actually sort of act upon it in this life, maybe you can at least, like the guy on the cross next to Jesus, maybe at least it can spark that faint flicker and get them going, even if they can't really take it anywhere in this life. At least the spark is lit. But, for those of us who are fortunate enough to have a little measure of stability, put it to good use. Challenge yourself to take things to the next notch. Try to be, capitalize on that little measure of stability to grab a hold of something. Because if you can get more spiritual strength woven within you during those times of calm that some of us actually have the fortune to have. It wasn't that long ago in human history. No one had the fortune of calm ever. It was just endless assault by the hordes and whatnot, But try to use those measures of calm to build some spiritual strength. So when the next thing comes, you can maybe handle it and not succumb to it. We don't all have to fall so easily when the seas get choppy. If we would take delight in cultivating, when we can, some greater strength. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. You'll see he's not going to let off. He's like, so I've talked about God the Supreme a little bit. I hope you picked that up. Let's take it the rest of the way.
Section 8. The Trinity beyond the finite. Many truths and facts pertaining to the Paradise Trinity can only be even partially comprehended by recognizing a function that transcends the finite.
Top-down point of view.
It would be inadvisable to discuss the functions of the Trinity of Ultimacy, but it may be disclosed that God the Ultimate is the Trinity manifestation comprehended by the Transcendentalists. We are inclined to the belief that the unification of the Master Universe is the eventuating act of the Ultimate and is probably reflective of certain, but not all, phases of the absonite overcontrol of the Paradise Trinity. The Ultimate is a qualified manifestation of the Trinity in relation to the absonite, only in the sense that the Supreme thus partially represents the Trinity in relation to the finite.
Okay, so now that last little bit, we've kind of already spoke to that quite a bit. I mean, again, the Supreme is not just simplistically the Trinity being expressed in manifest. I mean, there's all this other stuff going on, like the Almighty Supreme, for instance. Just take that as a fact. Let's notice, the more direct Trinity elements that he's bringing up there. Okay. Let's do contemplate it a little bit. In just the basic initial analogous fashion that is right there staring at you. When you look on the chart here, if we go beyond the Supreme to the Ultimate, okay, we look in that seventh functional level here on the infinite eternal ellipse. We've got enough of the picture here that we can just see it directly. Okay, just like we had the Supreme on that level, we had the Ultimate, okay. And that, of course, is going to be very incomplete from our current standing in eternity. Okay, but you've got the infinite upholder there again. Okay, and you have the Trinity of ultimacy now, as opposed to the Trinity of supremacy. So, what is the superadditive consequence of the relationship between the Trinity of ultimacy and the infinite upholder?
The absonite.
The absonite upholder, right there. Right? Okay, just like we had the finite upholder, for the finite domain, we have the absonite upholder for the absonite domain that they're speaking to here. Okay? The absonite upholder. Okay? When we talk about womb, focalizer, upholder, talk about totality, attitudes, coordinate action, cosmic over control. Okay, those parallel triplets. Okay. Upholder, over controller. Absonite upholder. What's the expression here? But not all phases of the absonite over control of the paradise trinity. Okay. Literally, what is the absonite over control? The absonite upholder. Upholder is over controller. Okay. I mean, if you just connect the two, the absonite upholder is being directly referenced there. See how sneaky he is? He's not supposed to take this too far directly. But he can do everything to suggest where you ought to go. He says, and so now we can go, he's saying, I ought to follow this forward deductively until I have something that I can directly understand leads to absonite over control, absonite upholding, something that I would call as a proper designation the capital A, capital U, absonite upholder. Okay, that's what you've got. Okay, that's the initial recognition. It's just you have, like I said, you have God the Supreme functioning as God the Mother, finite upholder. You have God the Ultimate functioning as God the Mother, the absonite upholder. Okay. And so everything is just very immediately parallel. I mean, the Trinity part is quite straightforwardly parallel. It's the other part that's more complicated when you go from the Supreme to the Ultimate. You don't just go from the Almighty to the Omnipotent, say. The rest of the picture is a lot more complicated. It isn't just a simple parallel. But the part that's coming down, think about it logically. Okay, where did the finite upholder come from? It came from the absonite upholder. Okay, this is a phenomenon that's coming top down. So not surprisingly, I should be able to follow that back up, and it's a very analogous phenomenon. Okay, but the Almighty is coming bottom up. And as it goes from the bottom up, it expands out and becomes more and more complicated. It isn't just a simple little thing that I can extrapolate up. Yeah. That's fundamentally why you can start to get a handle on this a little bit, is because of this. It's top down. It really is easy to just follow back up. Once you get it figured out at one level, just follow back up. You've got to have, a parallel sourcing thing as you go up.
Yep. The Almighty is a summarizer, right? So the omnipotent would be what.
Right, and see, and that they actually put that in one point. I believe it's actually literally in parentheses. You really shouldn't think of that. You think, well, that helps me. It's like, well, they say actually. it's actually hurting you more than you think it's helping you. It's making it far too simplistic. It isn't. The ultimate is not just the supreme on steroids. Okay, it's not just an exaltation of the supreme. Okay, it's you know, a thread of that and a gazillion other things. Okay, all right. So you know, most likely he's probably going to keep pushing here. We aren't just going to stop there and going beyond the finite.
The Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit are, in a certain sense, the constituent personalities of total deity. Their union in the Paradise Trinity and the absolute function of the Trinity equivalate to the function of total deity. And such completion of deity transcends both the finite and the absinite.
Okay, remember when last we talked about that, you know, bringing in that whole issue of that the Paradise Trinity functions on all levels, that absolute function of the Trinity of absoluteness, you know, goes all the way around the infinite eternal ellipse, reaching down when it can to the Trinity of ultimacy or all the way to the Trinity of supremacy, but you know, it goes all the way around. You know, that's they're bringing that up again. Okay, so you know you can't stop at the absinite. I mean, that transcends both the finite and the absinite. So you need to keep thinking beyond that. So that's all he's just reminding you of. And you know, and again, for those of us who are working on trying to study what we call total deity, you notice he used that expression again. Yeah. Total deity, getting the total deity viewpoint of things.
While no single person of the Paradise deities actually fills all deity potential, collectively all three do. Three infinite persons seem to be the minimum number of beings required to activate the pre-personal and existential potential of total deity, the deity absolute.
Okay, let me just say right there before we go any further, okay? Since we've already brought this up several times. You know that it's very likely that they're bringing up the deity absolute in a context that's not just a simple seven absolutes of infinity context where you're thinking of that as the reservoir for the of the potential for spirit substance. Okay? You know, we're clearly, you know, not talking about such a simple thing. You know that that's... that's, you know, he's suggesting God the Absolute. You know, he's pointing you towards God the Absolute, which, of course, God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, God the Absolute. That's obviously the next thing in play, okay? And, you know, and we all know, since, you know, we've been studying the total deity picture, we know if we really go to the unity viewpoint and really think about total deity, he used it again here, see? The pre-personal and existential potential of total deity. So in the total deity viewpoint, there's something that is actually called a potential. It's what you call the deity absolute when you flip it around and look at it from the unity viewpoint. What is that facet of deity? The infinite potential. Okay, he's based, you know, in so many words he's actually saying, you know, once you have the three persons, so that, you know, basically bottled up in their expression, you can't get everything all balled together into just God the Infinite anymore. You've liberated the potential for something else besides God the Infinite. Once you have the three persons anchoring the potential for otherness, you know, as it were, you know, you liberate all of this potential, of the infinite potential. And one of those, you know, you don't just have, you know, the finite potential and the and the absolute potential. I mean, you got an absolute potential, you know, that's tied to God, the absolute. All right.
We know the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit as persons, but I do not personally know the deity absolute. I love and worship God the Father. I respect and honor the deity absolute.
And of course, to make that more to the point, this came up recently in the seminar. I'm not going to respect and honor literally just the reservoir, okay? But I respect and honor a facet of total deity and its functioning as the infinite potential. I am that which intends. Boy, am I glad that there is such functioning, that there's intent. Because if there wasn't intent, I know, nothing would have ever gotten around to me coming into existence. I exist because there was pre-existent intent that I exist. And everything that had to, be spun up to make that happen, to make that intent a reality. I can certainly respect and honor the functioning of I am that which intends.
I once sojourned in a universe where a certain group of beings taught that the finaliters in eternity were eventually to become the children of the deity absolute. But I am unwilling to accept this solution of the mystery which enshrouds the future of the finaliters.
Let's go a little bit further. We'll kind of speak to that, why he threw that in there.
The core of the finality embrace, among others, those mortals of time and space who have attained perfection in all that pertains to the will of God. As creatures and within the limits of creature capacity, they fully and truly know God. Having thus found God as the Father of all creatures, these finaliters must sometime begin the quest for the superfinite Father. But this quest involves a grasp of the absolute nature of the ultimate attributes and character of the Paradise Father. Eternity will disclose whether such an attainment is possible, but we are convinced even if the finaliters do grasp this ultimate of divinity, they will probably be unable to attain the superultimate levels of deity, of absolute deity.
Okay, let me just bring in a couple little things there before we do that next paragraph. Okay, he's kind of expecting you to sort of be filling in some blanks here. We have the concept of the universal Father. He's been talking about the supreme being. Another name for the supreme being is the supreme Father. Okay, the Father of the total finite. Remember when we were going through the supreme papers and they pointed out that, okay, now actually, no matter how vast a finite mind you have, it is literally impossible, no matter how much you stretch that recognition upward, you can never get a breadth of consciousness that is wider than the finite. Hold on a second. So literally, all you could see is the width, as it were, of the supreme Father, the supreme being. You can think of the supreme being as you downstep the universal Father down to the level of the total finite. That's the supreme being, the supreme Father. Now, I can, because of the gifts I've been given, I can have an intuition that transcends that. And I can just know that when I experience that, I think Gloria is maybe going to bring up there, when I experience that transcendent engagement, that I know that actually is the Father reaching down and touching me. But I didn't have an absonite experience or an ultimate experience or a co-absolute. I mean, okay, all I can have is a finite experience. Okay. If the absolute touches me, I'm still only going to have a finite experience. That's what we're getting at there. Yeah. I can absolutely know something, but I can't absolutely experience something. Okay, I'm not an absolute being. Okay. And like he's saying there at the end, no matter how far you extrapolate, I mean, do you really think that you're going to be an absolute being at some point? Okay. I mean, yes, I can absolutely know that there's a God, because from the personality the God the Father gave me, it has an absolute dimension. It allows me to absolutely know that he exists. But it doesn't yet allow me some sort of a direct, absolute consciousness, in a literal understanding sense.
This behavior of fundamental particles like electronic level or subelectronic level is baffling to the physicists. And it because it's coming from a multi-dimensional reality of the ultimate.
It's worse than a multi-dimensional. It's coming from a transcendent reality. Okay, so it's not just multi-dimensional.
So there is a difference. There is a difference when it touches the finite, but it is projected on the finite, and it causes some conundrums of logic and reasoning.
Because it won't even behave like a multi-dimensional projection into three dimensions. It's going to behave like a transcendent fact imposing itself on the finite, an absonite fact imposing itself on the finite. And that is going to have some very strange manifestations. Especially if you don't believe in any transcendent fact, it will appear to behave magically. Well, I mean, ahas are transcending the limitations of your current consciousness. Yes. Back to his point here. Okay, along the lines of what Gloria was bringing out there. Okay, yes, you have three finite, three absolute in that absolute dimension, so that you can take this eternal journey. Okay, he's pointing to that eternal journey. Eventually, you will have maxed out the three finite dimensions of your personality. For instance, you'll be literally standing there shaking hands with the Supreme Father. Okay? But that's not the end. Like you say, okay, you then begin the quest for the super finite Father. Okay? The ultimate Father. Yeah? Beyond the Supreme Being, you go all the way to eternity, the end of all the absonite ages, the four absonite ages, And transcending that, let's say that can happen, that the consummator of universe destiny is going to facilitate, this process, and you're actually going to transcend, the final levels of the absonite, and you're going to stand there and shake hands with the super finite Father, with the ultimate Father. So that's what he's getting at. But he's saying, okay, but I still don't think you're going to go all the way to the absolute. Okay, now let's read a little bit more here.
It may be possible that the finaliters will partially attain the deity absolute, but even if they should, still in the eternity of eternities, the problem of the universal absolute will continue to intrigue, mystify, baffle, and challenge the ascending and progressing finaliters. For we perceive that the unfathomability of the cosmic relationships of the universal absolute will tend to grow in proportions as the material universes and their spiritual administration continue to expand.
Okay, so let's just absorb that before his final little statement there. Okay, so what is he speaking to here? So he's saying, okay, so let's say you do transcend the ultimate. Okay, now you're in co-absolute association. Okay, as a co-absolute being, you're upheld by some upholder. You're being upheld by the finite upholder now. Next universe ages, you'll be upheld by the absolute upholder. Okay, now as you're going this direction around the infinite eternal ellipse, you're going towards eternity. Okay, you get to eternity here at the end of the ultimate. Okay, and through this linkage, through the stasis of deity, okay, you can be connected into someone who would uphold you as a co-absolute being, the absolute upholder. That doesn't mean you're an absolute being, okay? But you're being upheld as a co-absolute being by the absolute upholder, saying, "Well, okay, let's say that it goes all the way to that." But there's still more, okay? Now, first of all, let's just think about it. He's giving you a bottom-up point of view to initially think about this. And notice he brings in the universal absolute. Here, let me just set this down for a second. In the simple seven absolutes of infinity viewpoint, you have the deity absolute and the unqualified absolute. The superadditive consequence of the relationship between those two is the universal absolute. Superadditive. Okay? Notice what he's bringing out there. So imagine actualizing stuff out of the reservoir of potential that's the unqualified absolute. What are you going to get? You're going to get more and more material universes. You're moving towards the cosmos infinite, even if you go beyond the master universe. Imagine actualizing more and more out of the reservoir of the deity absolute. You get more and more spirit. You have more and more spiritual administration. Okay, you can imagine actualizing more and more out of that, but even there, the superadditive consequence, it's a superadditive. The relationship is always a notch above even that notion of how much you've actualized. So no matter, those things just keep getting bigger and bigger, heading towards a cosmos infinite, for instance, and the superadded consequence of the relationship is even greater than the cosmos infinite. Okay, that's what he's pointing to. It's just like, okay, do you really think, does that feel like it's coming to any sort of an end? No, it just goes on and on. Okay, you go past eternity, and what's the expression he uses? Still in the eternity of eternities. Okay, like when we think in the infinite eternal ellipse, we think of ourselves going this direction or looking this direction around the ellipse towards eternity. But you can go, you can imagine that view going around and around and around in endless cycles of eternity. Okay? Eternity of eternities. In other words, you just fully go into what literally is an eternal state. From a temp, you're just taking the time viewpoint all the way to an aggrandized expression of the eternity of eternities. In other words, you now exist in eternity, period.
I thought eternity was a phase of completion, like you have each completion then you start another.
It's not, but you're not, you have to, you don't, you, it's a big, you know, it's an eon, certainly, okay, but it's not literally eternity, okay, that's
making it more confusing than.
Well, no, I'm just following what they're saying here, okay, what are they saying? Think about what they're saying. The point is that you take your notion of eternity, which, you know, that initial notion of eternity from this finite viewpoint, you know, again, you know, why do we make this an ellipse, not a circle? Okay? Because if you think of yourself as a little dot down here being engaged by deity at the fifth functional level, you have this very limited viewpoint. The universe seems to be a straight line to you. Yeah, I mean, if we made this even more pronounced ellipse, you know, this would be a very long side here. And it would seem very straight right here. Okay? Your initial perspective is that you just have a straight line heading to eternity. Okay? And all you do with that initial perspective is say, well, okay, it's kind of like that. Okay? It's not literally a straight line sort of a thing. Okay? But it does go forward. But as you start to get out, you can picture it curving around. And that thing that you're calling eternity, which, you know, in your initial straight line point of view is, you know, takes forever to go along that line before you can get to eternity. Actually, it's right there. When you reach this radial line, you've reached that quote-unquote eternity. It takes eternity to complete the absonite. Okay? So if you take it all the way to eternity and the, you know, in the completion of the master universe, you still don't have an infinite universe. You still have a very much limited universe. It's really big. The fourth outer space level is very big, but it's not infinite. Okay? So, you know, you've reached the limits of being able to extrapolate that time viewpoint. You just have to let go of that. And the doorway to letting go of it is an expression like they use in the book of eternity of eternities or endless cycles of eternity. Those kind of expressions are suggestions to let go at that point. And don't try to think about it in some time-like sequence anymore. Just think about it logically now. Let go of that time-like element. And just logically, you're moving up. You can move up through the finite and get to the supreme. And afterwards, you can move up through the absonite and get to the ultimate. And then you can, after that, logically, you could move up through the co-absolute, heading towards the absolute. Okay? And then what he's bringing in here, okay, if you take it out of that simple bottom-up point of view, where you're noticing the super additivity is always chasing ahead of even how far you're moving the matter and the spirit forward, if you turn the universal absolute around, what's that facet of deity called?
Infinite upholder.
The infinite upholder. Not the finite upholder or the supreme upholder or the absolute upholder or the ultimate upholder, you know, or the co-absolute upholder or the absolute upholder. Not even the co-infinite upholder. The infinite upholder. Okay? Okay? You know, so you're saying, okay, if you're at the point where you can actually think in the total deity viewpoint and turn that around, let those words, you know, let that adjective just sink in. Does it sound like you could ever get to that end point? You know, where the actual end point lies, not just the initial illusion of the absolutes or the end point. You know, beyond that is the co-infinite and with the end point of the infinite. I mean, okay, there actually is no reaching, okay? Even if you get to the point where you logically extrapolate and imagine some extremely advanced stage after endless cycles of eternity of some incredibly advanced co-absoluteness being upheld by the absolute upholder, you're still miles away from the infinite upholder. Okay, that's kind of what he's getting at.
The infinite it's infinite within its parameters to the degree that it's infinite.
I mean, think about things like, you know, that super additive of the infinite, a simple one, even in the individuality viewpoint, you know. They've said it a couple times, this notion of, it seems that three infinite persons, wherever the heck that was. Remember when he said that? It's right here. Yeah, three infinite persons seem to be the minimum number. Okay. Three infinite persons. Okay, let's just take it at face value. I have three infinite persons, the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit. I actually recognized it in the name there. Okay. Well, in that picture, you know, that simple seven absolutes of infinity picture, the infinite Spirit is a super additive consequence of the relationship between the universal Father and the eternal Son. So, infinite person, you know, infinite person, super additive consequences, infinite, but, you know, super infinite, you know, in that way of thinking about it. It goes on and on. I mean, you can think about it in all kinds of ways like that. There's even things, once we get into the higher levels of thinking about total deity, you can even go beyond the infinite upholder. Okay? Okay. To higher levels of the infinite, as it were. Okay? Okay. But initially we take a very parochial view of eternity and infinity. Okay? That initial parochial view, which is all he's really invoking here. He's not wanting to launch you off, you know, he's not trying to get you to go off in some endless rumination of Hindu infinities or something here. Okay? Okay. All he's wanting you to do is just picture this. And say, if I'm here and I imagine myself going forward, this is heading towards eternity. What if I go the other direction? Okay? Read the last sentence.
Only infinity can disclose the Father infinite.
Okay, sponsored by a universal censor acting by authority of the Ancients of Days resident on Universa. Okay. So from this vantage point, I can look this way towards eternity and I reach it right there. Or I can look this way towards infinity and I reach it right there. Okay? And when you picture it like this, instead of picturing it in a column, if you wrap it around into the infinite eternal ellipse, you discover that eternity is connected to infinity, and infinity is connected to eternity. And that whole simplistic space-time viewpoint disappears. Okay? And think about what this statement says. Can you literally understand this sentence? Only infinity can disclose the Father infinite. Now, what's the Father infinite? Okay, you have these facets of the Father, the infinite upholder, universal controller, the universal creator, universal Father. So initially, when you're here looking, this is your horizon line here. You can flip it around like that. Yeah, you imagine you look to the horizon line. Okay, you can't see below the horizon with a direct view. Okay, all you can see with a direct view is you can only see to the universal Father. If you use your insight to penetrate beyond the horizon, the next thing you see is the first source with that insight. Okay? If you take those facets of the Father, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, go all the way around, those five facets together are called the Father Absolute. Because look what it's juxtaposed to, the Absolute. Okay, if you go all the way, if you use your insight to go all the way to the first center, okay, now it's not just the Father Absolute, that's the Father Infinite, because what's it juxtaposed to? The infinite. So if you look all the way to infinity, what do you find? The Father Infinite. Only infinity can disclose the Father infinite. If you only go this far, it only discloses the Father absolute. If you only go this far, it only discloses the universal Father. Okay. That sentence is just a literal reference to the infinite eternal ellipse and this recognition that this goes to infinity, that goes to eternity. See, and he says that right after he was getting you to think about going around to eternity. And he's, that last little sentence is, now turn around the other way and look to infinity, and what do you see? Father infinite.
Yeah. Is that also, because I still think of the Father, he limited himself, but what he retained was will, so isn't that really the infinity of will?
No, there's two things he kept. That the first source is that infinity of will, but there's something past that. The first center.
First center.
There's one more thing he couldn't give away. Now we'll talk about that some as we get more into total deity.
So you would have to have eternity. If there's a flow, if you're putting an end at it, then it's not exactly a flow anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you go to either endpoint and you enter into the stasis of deity. You have to, you have to actually let go of some sort of a simplistic, sequential extrapolation viewpoint. You have to embrace the whole.
And it has to be a buffer there. Otherwise, if that center portion, that top portion, starts to have short circuits and error amongst itself, then the rest of this would go away, start going away.
Yeah, and that buffer, first center.
Short
he has to prevent the whole thing from short circuiting and balling all up into God the Infinite again.
Right. Yeah. And okay. He does that because...
So he takes you all the way around the infinite eternal ellipse. You know, he leads you up through the supreme and the ultimate and absolute. And, but see the, just maybe one other little thing, that curious thing. I once sojourned in the universe. Okay. He's saying, you can over extrapolate your bottom up point of view like those beings I once experienced were doing. They're saying he's saying think about it logically. I can grant you going all the way up to the co-absolute, but let's bring some humility in here, okay? You're not going to go all the way literally to the absolute. You're not going to be an absolute being where you literally think of yourself as this direct absolute child of absolute deity, okay? Yeah, and never mind that's not the top either. There's stuff beyond that. Okay? You always have to see yourself, no matter how far you extrapolate, in a sub-absolute context.
Well, what I was trying visualizing there, we're going towards eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to get to the deity absolute,
you have to go past eternity. Yeah.
Past infinity.
Yeah. Past eternity.
Past
infinity. Yeah. I mean, the way you just say you go past eternity, in other words, the whole temporal thing just disappears. It has no meaning anymore. But see, that's the thing. I mean, if you want to really eternalize your viewpoint, you need to take it past eternity.
Right.
You don't want to eternityize your viewpoint. You want to eternalize your viewpoint. That's something even higher. That's even greater. Okay, that's just letting go.
I mean, yeah. Talk about eternal lighters.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think he was disputing that.
Right. See, you need an eternal lighter. Would be one of those co-absolute beings. Where you've gone beyond eternity, and now you're an eternal lighter. Right. Okay. All right. So next time we'll get into the Pentateuch on cosmology, and just one little thing to think about as we leave existential deity behind here in a direct way. Remember what I've pointed out, you know, when you think about God the Mother as an overarching facet of deity and having three primary subfacets. If you have God the Mother, you have God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and God the Absolute. That's the three facets, and we were just talking about them. Okay, there has to be a parallel thing. If God the Father is the other overarching facet of deity, there has to be three things under there. There's God the Son, God the Spirit. Well, okay, so everything is cool so far. What's the third thing?
Isle of
the Isle of Paradise. Okay, which is not God the anything. It's not a thing you think of as a person at all. It's a pattern, an energy pattern, but not a spirit pattern. Yeah, and remember, there actually is a parallel. That's part of the complication in talking about God the Absolute. It isn't just God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and God the Absolute. It's just more of the same, only, you know, greater. Part of what you understand is the Absolute, the deity that's being personalized as God the Absolute, is the unqualified Absolute, the reservoir of non-deity potential. Yeah. And God is personalized deity. So it's kind of quote-unquote God the Absolute, if you think about it like that. We've got this. See, the first thing that they talk about, rather than the next paper being, if you look, if you flip forward, you've got the universe of universes, and then you go to the sacred spheres. But before they do it, you've got kind of a transitional. The Isle of Paradise paper is the little bit of leftover from talking about what's underneath God the Father. Okay, yeah, and it's the transition into the cosmos, into just the reality of the universe. All right, let's take a moment to reflect on that.